Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to chumbacasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This is Hidden Killers Half Year in Review. A look back at some of the most compelling cases of 2026 so far. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
On Friday, a judge in Los Angeles signed a sealed medical order in the Nick Reiner murder case. Three sources with direct knowledge confirmed to NBC4 that Nick Reiner was being treated for schizophrenia, had been for years, and that his medication was changed weeks before he allegedly stabbed both of his parents to death. And already I can see where this is going. Already the groundwork is being laid. The defense will say Nick was sick. The defense will say the medication made him unstable. The defense will say he wasn't in his right mind and the system failed him. And this was a tragedy nobody could have prevented. Here's what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to let that narrative go unchallenged. Because Nick Reiner had every resource a human being could possibly had. He had parents with money, real money. He had access to the best psychiatric care in the country. He was recently in a facility that reportedly charged $70,000 a month, a place that specializes in exactly his combination of problems, schizophrenia and addiction, treated together. He had doctors actively managing his case, adjusting his medications, trying to find the combination that would stabilize him, allegedly. And according to sources, he was still using, still making the choice. And it is a choice, but to put substances into his body that he knew would destabilize him further, yeah, that's choice. And if he was still doing it, still refusing to do the one thing that might have kept him and everyone around him safe, comply with treatment. That is allegedly what was going on. Medication only works if you take it. Sobriety only works if you stay sober. Nick Reiner apparently did neither. And two people are dead because of those choices that were made. If, in fact, Nick Reiner is the one behind his parents' murder. And obviously, if we're playing along at home, that's where the arrows are pointing right now. Let's go back to 2015, because this is where the dynamic started, or at least where it went public. Rob and Nick Reiner made a movie together called Being Charlie. It was semi-autobiographical, based on Nick's struggles with addiction, his revolving door through rehab programs, his fractured relationship with his father. In interviews promoting that film, Rob Reiner said something that is haunting now. He said the treatment programs weren't working. He said Nick kept telling him that the experts were wrong, and Rob admitted publicly on the record that he and Michelle made a mistake. They listened to the professionals instead of their son. Quote, when Nick would tell us that it wasn't working for him, we wouldn't listen, Rob said. Quote, we were desperate, and because the people had diplomas on their wall, we listened to them when we should have been listening to our son. Here's the thing about that statement. It sounds like an enlightened parent learning from his mistakes. It sounds like a father who finally understood that his son knew himself better than the experts did. It sounds like growth. But here's what the pattern suggests. The professionals were telling them what Nick needed to do. Nick was telling them the opposite. One of those sources had a vested interest in avoiding accountability. The other didn't. That's not a system failing. That's the system being undermined by the patient and the family letting it happen. I want to be clear about something, because this is where people get confused. Schizophrenia is certainly a real illness. It is serious. It's not a moral failing. And people with schizophrenia are far more likely to be victims of violence than perpetrators. I'm not demonizing mental illness here. I'm not saying everyone with schizophrenia is dangerous, but I am saying this. Having a mental illness doesn't erase your choices. It doesn't eliminate your agency, and it sure as hell doesn't give you a pass for allegedly stabbing your parents to death in their bedroom. Nick Reiner knew he had schizophrenia. He knew he needed medication. He knew that using drugs would make that condition worse, because that's what happens. And everyone in his life had been telling him that for years. According to TMZ, sources say his substance abuse was actively worsening the schizophrenia. His drug use wasn't separate from his psychosis. It was fuel on the fire. And he allegedly kept pouring it on anyway. That's not a symptom. That is a choice. The medication change everyone is pointing to, sources say it happened 3 to 4 weeks before the killings. They say Nick became more erratic, not less. One source says he was out of his head. But here's what nobody is asking. Why did the medication need to be changed in the first place? Often it's because the patient isn't compliant with the current regimen. Often it's because they're using substances that interfere with the drugs. Often it's because the patient has made the current treatment unattainable through their own behavior. But we do not know the answer to that question, but it is a fair question to be asking, considering the circumstances. We do not know these specifics yet, but we do know Nick's pattern. We know he'd been undermining his own treatment for 17 years, and we know that pattern didn't magically stop in the weeks before his parents died. Here's what kills me about the "we tried everything" framing. Michelle Reiner, and I believe they did, Michelle Reiner reportedly told friends in recent weeks exactly that. And I certainly believe that they did try everything. I believe they spent ungodly amounts of money. I believe they sent Nick to every program, every facility, every specialist they could find. And I believe they loved their son and wanted him to get better more than anything in this world. But here's the reality. And anyone can fall into this. This is not victim blaming. Again, like I've said about this case from the beginning, let this be a cautionary tale. The Reiners were philanthropists. They were folks who gave back, who wanted to see the good in people and in life. And they gave back in so many ways. I could only imagine, and I certainly can't speak for them, that if there's something they could look back on and go, could this be a learning experience? Could this help someone else through our story? I would imagine they'd be all about it. Even though, as tragic as it was, making this never happen to begin with would be obviously option one. But we're not there. So if this can be a cautionary tale, listen up. Trying everything doesn't mean doing everything right. It doesn't mean the things you tried should have worked or did work. It's not an indictment on trying everything, because there's always going to be more to try. The Reiners, by Rob's own admission, stopped trusting the experts. They started trusting Nick. They brought him to a holiday party the night before he allegedly killed them, a party where, according to multiple sources, he caused a scene. He interrupted private conversations. He was told to back off and then stormed out. There was a loud argument between father and son, allegedly. What did they think was going to happen? What did they think they were dealing with? I'm not blaming Rob or Michelle for their own deaths. Nick Reiner allegedly murdered them, and if convicted, he should pay for that for the rest of his life. But I am saying that the Reiners made decisions based on a distorted understanding of their son. An understanding that Nick himself had cultivated over 17 years. Let that sink in. If you have someone in your life where you're going, the Reiners made decisions based on a distorted understanding of their son. Distorted understanding of their son. One that had basically been conditioned in them, cultivated over the last 17 years by Nick. Nick convinced them that the only person to listen to was him. At these doctors, these experts, these people who did have a vested interest in helping him get better, they were wrong and Nick was right. And he at some point convinced Rob and Michelle that that was reality. Now, were they still sitting there thinking that in these last moments of their lives? I have no idea. But we do know at some point that goal was achieved. He had told them the programs were wrong. And at some point they believed him. He told them the experts didn't understand and they believed him. He told them he was trying and they believed him. And now they're dead. Because believing Nick was always the wrong call. The professionals knew it. The treatment centers knew it. Everyone except the two people who loved him most knew it. Let's talk about the party for a second, because this is important. The night before the killings, Rob and Michelle brought Nick to that Christmas party at Conan O'Brien's house. Multiple sources confirmed Nick was disruptive. He interrupted a private conversation between other guests. When he was told to leave it alone, he stormed off. There was a loud argument. Why was Nick at the party? Again, I want to be careful how you're understanding how I am framing this. This is not blaming Rob and Michelle Reiner. This is showing you an example of how the addict was able to achieve creating a distorted way of thinking about him with his parents, where the following seemed logical. And to everybody else, we're like, why would you do that? Think about it. If your adult child had schizophrenia, was actively using drugs, and just had their medications changed, all allegedly, and was, according to sources, behaving in increasingly erratic and dangerous ways, would you bring them to a Hollywood Christmas party? Would you put them in an environment full of alcohol, full of stimulation, full of opportunities for exactly the kind of incident that apparently happened? Or would you recognize that maybe this wasn't time for normalcy? That including Nick in family events had to take a back seat to managing the crisis he was actively in. Rob and Michelle brought him anyway. They brought him because they'd spent 17 years being conditioned by Nick to normalize the abnormal. Because they'd learned to tell themselves that Nick's bad behavior was just Nick, and that they'd seen worse, and that it would be fine. They brought him because they couldn't see the threat clearly anymore. Because he'd spent nearly two decades conditioning them not to. Anyone who's in the role of the caregiver for an individual like this, if you end up going down their path with them just a bit, this is one of the first gates they want to walk you through. And it's easy because you want to get that person better. And for a little while, it sure as hell seems like it. And then you go through the gates and, oh, you're in the circus from hell. Just past the popcorn stand over here, things get really twisted and weird because you're in the line for addict land. And in addict land, nothing is what it seems. That's what years of this dynamic does. Call it manipulation, call it the disease, call it whatever you want. The effect is the same. It doesn't just work in the moment. It reshapes how you see everything. It erodes your ability to recognize danger until the danger is right in front of you and you still can't see it. Sources tell TMZ this case is headed towards a not guilty plea by reason of insanity. And of course it is. The insanity defense is the last play, the final move. Nick Reiner allegedly killed his parents, and now he's going to ask a jury to believe he wasn't responsible because his brain was broken, because the medication changed, because the system failed him. But here's what the jury should know. Nick Reiner's brain didn't break overnight. It was compromised for years and years. He had access to treatment. He had access to medication. He had access to facilities that cost more per month than most Americans make in a year. He had parents who were willing to do anything, spend anything, sacrifice anything to help him get better. And he chose to use. And something in his behavior or condition made his doctors decide the current medication regimen wasn't working. Whether that was noncompliance, drug interference, or something else, we don't know yet. But we know his pattern. He chose to tell his parents the experts were wrong and he was right, and they believed him because he'd been running that place since he was 15 years old. An insanity plea doesn't account for 17 years of choices. It treats the final moment as if it happened in a vacuum, as if everything before it was just prologue. But the final moment was the result of those 17 years. Every choice not to comply, every choice to use, every choice to undermine the people trying to help him. They all led to that bedroom in Brentwood. You don't get to spend two decades making your situation worse and then claim you're not responsible for where you ended up. Rob Reiner was 78 years old. Michelle Singer Reiner was 70. They'd been married for 36 years. They raised three children. They built careers. They gave to causes they believed in. They showed up for their son over and over again, long past the point where many parents would have walked away. Their daughter, Romy, found their body. She's 27. She's going to carry that with her for the rest of her life. Jake Reiner, Nick's older brother, 34. He and Romy released a statement that didn't mention Nick at all. They were just our parents. Or they weren't just our parents. They were our best friends. Those are the victims, not Nick. Not the guy who's about to claim his broken brain made him do it. The victims are the two people who never stopped trying, who spent 17 years and God knows how much money, who believed their son when they shouldn't have, and who died because of it. Nick Reiner is facing two counts of first-degree murder with special circumstances. The DA has not decided yet whether to seek the death penalty. The arraignment is January 7th. Whatever defense Alan Jackson puts together, whatever story he talks about medication changes and psychotic breaks and the system that failed his client, remember this. Nick Reiner had every resource, every advantage, every opportunity to make different choices. He didn't. And now his parents are dead. His siblings are shattered, and he's sitting in a cell wearing a suicide smock, waiting to tell a jury that none of it was really his fault. That's not tragedy. That's accountability coming due. 17 years late, but finally arriving. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. I would love to hear them. We do read them, try to respond as many as we possibly can. We get thousands a day. So trust me, we do read. It's a matter of having more fingers to type with. But we do try to get back to you guys. So please do, if you have thoughts, I'd love to see them and hear them in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not already there, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. If you're on the podcast platforms, specifically Apple Podcasts, if you wouldn't mind, leave us a review there on Apple Podcasts if you're finding our reporting and our commentary valuable. We really, really appreciate that. It signals to other folks that you're finding this valuable, so they can discover it as well. So a quick review there on Apple Podcasts if you have a moment. Thank you in advance for that. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi, and we will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Alan Jackson is out. That's the big headline, as you probably already know about. Alan Jackson is out as Nick Reiner's attorney. What does this all mean now going forward? We are going to break all of that down. Now that the dust has settled a little bit on this, we're going to be going through this in a series of videos over the next couple of days, but let's start somewhere, shall we? And while we do, I'd love to get your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, or on our Substack channel. The link is in the description. You can join that for free right now. That's a way to discuss this directly with me on our Substack. So if you want to get in on that, please do join us there. Like I said, it's absolutely free right now to sign up, get in there, and join us in that conversation. Hit subscribe wherever you're listening to us right now, by the way, whether it's Apple Podcasts or YouTube or wherever it may be. Okay, so 3 weeks ago, Alan Jackson was the million-dollar defense attorney building the insanity defense for the biggest murder case in Hollywood history. A lot of us chatting this up over the holidays, right? The guy who got Karen Reed acquitted, the guy who represented Harvey Weinstein and Kevin Spacey, the guy whose cases cost five, six, seven figures. The thought process was, okay, well, he ain't cheap. Nick hasn't made a dime of money pretty much a day in his life. That's probably not completely accurate, but hasn't exactly had a track record of holding down a career. So where does one get the money for something like that when his budget is probably, you know, you might be pushing it if you're going to try and go rent a movie from the closed down Blockbuster on the way home. Might be kind of out of the budget, even though the Blockbuster is closed down and you can't rent movies there anymore. Still might be a bit too expensive for his blood. Well, you assume that family money must be taking care of this. That kind of enraged a lot of people. And it should. It's another, on the surface, the way it appeared. Everybody's making their assumptions, and their assumptions are right, and it's not hard to connect those dots, that the very money that Rob and Michelle Reiner worked so hard their entire lives to procure would then be spent on defending and, again, rescuing the very person who stole their lives from them. Money that could be spent in so many other viable ways to help people who actually want help, who deserve help, who can thrive with help. Nick clearly not being one of them. And the idea of all that money going to have an attorney explain away under California law why he's not guilty. And he may be not guilty under California law. That doesn't mean he didn't go to his parents and slit their throats and do what he did. It just means that it could be argued under California law, under technicalities of in the sanity defense, that he would be not guilty, quote unquote. Another episode of not being accountable for the horrible choices that he made. And it's not to say schizophrenia and all that's not real. It certainly is. But he has 32 years under his belt of making poor decision after poor decision that leads him into these scenarios where he goes out of control. And those choices were made not in the state of psychosis. It's a big debate. One can argue it 50 different ways. I can understand both sides to a certain extent, but what I can't understand is, after all of this time, is it morally right? Is it appropriate? Is it appropriate that the people you murdered are going to fund, or were going to fund, or you wanted them to fund the defense of your ultimate destruction project? Good news. He walked into a Los Angeles courtroom, Alan Jackson did, and told the judge, Teresa McGonigal, he had no choice but to withdraw, and walked out, leaving Nick Reiner with a public defender that he met 30 seconds before the hearing. It's kind of like, yes, finally. This is exactly what we said should happen. And bravo to whoever made this decision. Or maybe Alan Jackson, maybe there was never a plan to fund Alan Jackson from the family. It was just all Alan Jackson reading tea leaves, thinking maybe there's a way to get some money here. Because Nick has not been convicted of anything yet, so maybe he still has access to some of those purse strings. Maybe when I found out he didn't, and the brother and sister said, F off. Again, this is my conjecture on what maybe happened. Your guess is as good as mine, but again, it's not hard to connect dots. Sources tell Deadline that money is likely the reason Jackson stepped aside. And if true, that means the deep pockets have dried up. The estate funding that sources said was paying for Jackson's services apparently ended or was cut off or just never happened, you know? Dive in head first. You know, worst case, you wasted a couple weeks, Alan. The pattern that protected Nick Reiner for 17 years, the pattern that sources said was continuing even after his parents were found stabbed to death in their bedroom, that pattern appears to have finally broken. Knock on wood. For the first time in his life, Nick Reiner will face consequences without his parents' money coming to the rescue. If only this happened sooner, right? I'm going to say something that might be controversial. This might be the best thing that could have happened. It is. And let me be clear about what I mean. I'm not celebrating Nick Reiner's situation. I'm not rooting for anyone's destruction. Any more than Nick Reiner was rooting for his own destruction, which he was pretty good at. People like this do tend to just destroy themselves. They don't need outside assistance. And I'm not saying public defenders are inferior. Many of them are exceptional attorneys who do incredible work with limited resources. What I'm saying is this. For 17 years, money was the solution to every problem Nick Reiner created. Every crisis got a check. Every relapse got another program. Every outburst got absorbed, managed, handled. At least 18 rehab programs. $70,000 a month treatment. $10,000 monthly allowance, a rent-free guest house, a movie deal to work through trauma on screen. And when he was arrested for allegedly murdering the two people who funded it all, the first call was to the most expensive defense attorneys in the country. The pattern was still operational, even from beyond the grave. Rob and Michelle Reiner spent their lives writing checks to protect their son from consequences. And according to sources, their estate was prepared to keep writing those checks, funding a multi-million dollar defense for the man accused of stabbing them to death. That's not justice. That's not accountability. That's the same enabling that failed for 17 years, continuing in a slightly different, more creepy form. And now it appears that's over. Bravo to whoever finally turned the spigot off. Let's talk about what happened in that courtroom. Nick Reiner showed up in a brown jail jumpsuit, head shaved, shackled at the wrists and ankles. He sat behind glass in the custody area while Alan Jackson and two other attorneys from his firm, Caleb Mason and Miss Speranga, went into the judge's chambers for a private discussion. When they came out, Jackson told the court, "We have no choice but to withdraw as a counsel and ask to be removed." No explanation, no details, just we're done. Deputy Public Defender Kimberly Green stepped in. She's got 19 years of experience. She's not green. She was informed last night that Jackson would be withdrawing. She had about 30 seconds to speak with Nick before the hearing actually began. 30 seconds. That's what he's working with now. When the judge asked Nick if he agreed to delay the arraignment to February 23rd, he said, "Oh, yeah, I agree with your honor on that." Like the dope he is. When he asked if he waived his right to a speedy trial, he said, "Yes, I agree, your honor." Those were his only words. Then he was led back to jail. No bail, no million-dollar lawyer, no estate money, apparently, flowing towards his defense. Excuse me while I'm happy about this. Just Nick Reiner alone facing the consequences of what happened on December 14th. Outside the courthouse, no stranger to cameras, Jackson held a press conference. And what he said was fascinating. And we're going to dig into this in another video here shortly. He told reporters, "What we have learned, and you can take this to the bank, is that pursuant to the laws of this state, pursuant to the laws in California, Nick Reiner is not guilty of murder. Print that." As if it's 1987 and everybody's running to the print press. Quickly, stop the presses. Alan Jackson says to print this. He said his team had dropped everything when they got the call 3 weeks ago. that they devoted literally every waking hour to investigating the case, that they'd examined it top to bottom, back to front, like a Lionel Richie album. 10 people got that. And after all that work, he's convinced, Nick is not guilty of murder under California law. He's talking about the insanity defense. He's saying the evidence supports it. He's saying he believes it would work. But he's not the one who's going to argue it anymore. When asked why he withdrew, Jackson said, "Circumstances beyond our control, but more importantly, circumstances beyond Nick's control have dictated that. Sadly, it's made it impossible for us to continue our representation. I'm legally and ethically, I am prohibited from explaining all of the reasons why I can't continue to represent Nick." Circumstances beyond Nick's control. Wild guess. Yeah? Wild guess. You know what's interesting about that phrase? For 17 years, everything was within Nick's control because his parents' money made it so. He could game the rehab system because they'd pay for another program. He could reuse treatment because they'd let him come home anyway. He could choose homelessness over sobriety because he knew the guest house would always be there. Nick had options. Nick had choices. Nick had a safety net made of cash. And for the first time, circumstances are beyond his control. He can't buy his way out. He can't rely on his parents' wealth to provide the best possible outcome because he killed them. The people who were always there willing to provide the best possible outcome to his idiotic choices that he did make with his own free fucking will. He murdered the hand that feeds him. He's in the same position as anyone else, accused of a crime, dependent on what the system provides, now that everyone else around him told him to go push dirt. It's not tragedy, that's just reality. The reality everyone else faces. The public defender who's now representing Nick, Kimberly Green, said something outside the courthouse that caught my attention. She said, "We've had no contact with the family. I don't think they were aware that this was going on." Weren't we not? Me? I don't know. Again, pure speculation on the cash thing on Jackson. We don't know for sure. I'm going to guess, Kimberly, you're brand new to the case, like 30 seconds in. I don't know how much you do know about what's going on. So I don't know it's wise to make definitive statements either without actually having knowledge. Otherwise, that's speculation as well. Again, my conjecture. But just think about that for a second. If the family was funding the defense, if Jake and Romy and Tracy were using estate money to pay Jackson, or at least that's what was promised by Nick to Jackson, and then found out that Jake and Romy and Tracy all said go, you know, pound sand, how would they not know he was withdrawing? But again, if you look at the scenario, they don't necessarily need to be in that picture. They could have simply gotten the call from the attorney's office saying, "Yeah, we'd like to run a card, please, a little down payment, little retainer." And they might have said, "That's not going to happen." And you got Nick on the other end going, "Well, no, it should work. It always has worked. The card always works." And then suddenly it doesn't work. They're like, "Well, sorry, card doesn't work. We don't have any other ones to give you." And then the Jackson Brigade says, beyond our control. Lake can't control the card. He can't control if the card's being denied. He can't control if they're not going to pay us, which he probably can't. And if we're not getting paid, well, we're not a charity. And he's not. And he doesn't have to do this pro bono. And he doesn't necessarily need the publicity either. something changed. Someone made a decision. Either the funds were cut off, or there was a dispute about strategy, or the court determined Nick was indigent, or something in the investigation made continued representation impossible. Truly anything is possible. We don't know which, but we know the result. My speculation is really just as good as yours. It's just that. The Reiner family released a statement saying they have the utmost trust in the legal process. They declined to comment further. A source told the New York Times that Jackson's withdrawal had nothing to do with his performance. He'd been a pro. Yeah. And, you know, he was. I'm not here to say anything bad about Alan Jackson's performance. If you need a defense attorney, he's a good one to get, if you can afford it. He will find any magical way to, I don't want to say manipulate the law, but a way to interpret the law that will look best for whoever he is representing. That's his job, and he's good at it. That's why he makes the money he makes. Some may look at it and go, well, that's shady, that's slimy, that's this, that's that. It's whatever you want to look at it as. Everybody does need representation in this country. And sometimes even shitty people, you know, can afford really, really good representation. And then they get away with shit too, because that representation is so good. Not necessarily that it's following the letter of the law, or maybe it is following the letter of the law, and it points out the issues with our letter of the law and how bizarrely ineffective they can be when run through the prism of a mind like Alan Jackson. Again, none of that is a negative statement towards Alan Jackson. He's a genius at what he does. A genius at what he does who's not going to be using those magical powers of his to help Nick Reiner anymore. So this wasn't about Jackson's work. It wasn't about Nick firing him. It was about circumstances, money circumstances, most likely according to sources. And here's what I keep coming back to. Maybe this is what should have happened all along. Let me tell you what I mean by that. For 17 years, the Reiner family's wealth created a buffer between Nick and reality. Every time he should have faced consequences, money intervened. Every time the natural outcome of his choices would have forced a reckoning, resources softened the blow. Nick himself talked about this. In 2016, he told NPR, "I am a spoiled white rich kid from a Hollywood family, but I think it's even more of a testament to how powerful drugs can be that you don't care about any of that stuff." And it's true. Addiction is a disease that destroys motivation in the human brain. He knew, he understood that his privilege was extraordinary, and he used it. He admitted to gaming the rehab system. He said he preferred homelessness to the programs his parents suggested. He preferred being homeless. Because he didn't want to have the consequences that they would let him face. Rob Reiner acknowledged the failure too. He said, "When Nick would tell us that it wasn't working for him, we wouldn't listen. We were desperate, and because the people had diplomas on their wall, we listened to them when we should have been listening to our son all along," which was, again, not a great way to interpret the information and operate. And we know how it ended. They tried everything money could buy, and money couldn't buy what Nick actually needed: accountability, consequences, a system that would hold him regardless of how many checks were written. Now, finally, he appears to have that. And I want to be careful here because the mental health component is real. TMZ reports that Nick was diagnosed with schizoaffective disorder. It's a serious psychiatric condition that combines symptoms of schizophrenia with mood disorder components. Sources say his medication was changed in the weeks before the killings, that he became erratic and dangerous, that he was out of his head. And if that's true, if Nick was genuinely in the grip of psychosis when his parents were killed, then the insanity defense Jackson was building may have merit. The question of criminal responsibility is legitimate. The mental illness is real. But here's the thing. The insanity defense doesn't require a $1 million attorney. It requires evidence, medical records, psychiatric evaluations, expert testimony. All of that will be available to the public defender. The facts don't change based on who's presenting them. What changes is the resources behind the presentation, the investigators, the expert witnesses, the support staff, the hours devoted to building the case. And maybe that's exactly how it should be. Because if Nick Reiner's insanity defense is legitimate, it will succeed regardless of whether he's represented by Alan Jackson or Kimberly Green. The evidence is what it is. The law is what it is. California's insanity standard doesn't require a client to afford a $2,000 an hour attorney. If the defense only works when you have unlimited resources, then it was never really about justice. It was about money buying a better outcome. That's exactly what's been happening to Nick his entire life. DA Nathan Hochman stood outside that same courthouse today and said, "We are fully confident that a jury will convict Nick Reiner beyond a reasonable doubt of the brutal murders of his parents, Rob Reiner and Michelle Singer Reiner, and do so unanimously." He's prosecuting this case with his office's full resources. Deputy DA Habib Baleen is leading, the same prosecutor who handled the Menendez brothers' resentencing and the Robert Durst trial. This is a serious team. And now, for the first time, they're facing an opponent who does not have unlimited resources to match them. Some people might say that's unfair. And Nick deserves the best possible defense, and everyone accused of a crime should have access to the Alan Jacksons of the world. And in principle, sure, I agree. If there was that many Alan Jacksons to go around, our system should provide excellent representation to everyone, regardless of wealth. But in practice, that's not how it works. Unless you're going to suddenly breed groups of people that are magically that competent and that good and that well, doing that well at what they do, so everything across the board is completely equal, and then good luck, go do it and show me, let me know when you got that done. But unfortunately, this is a game of skill to a certain extent. Maybe AI will level that table out a bit as the years progress. But in practice, again, it's not how this works. Most defendants get public defenders. Most people facing murder charges don't have estates worth $200 million funding their representation. Most families can't hire the attorney who got Karen Reed acquitted. Nick Reiner is now in the same position as everyone else. For the first time in his life, he's operating without the advantage of his parents' money. Yeah, that's not injustice. That's the absence of privilege. Rob and Michelle Reiner spent 17 years trying to save their son. They loved him. They worried about him. They feared for him. And according to sources, they feared him too. They did everything they could, depended on everything that they could put out there, deployed every available resource, and it wasn't enough. And then they died, allegedly at his hands, in their own bedroom, stabbed to death. And even after that, even after the blood in the hotel shower and the bodies in the master bedroom and the daughter who had to find them, their money was reportedly still being used to protect him, to fund the best possible defense, to give him advantages that other defendants don't have. The pattern was apparently continuing from beyond the grave. Now it appears that it's not. I don't know if Nick Reiner is technically guilty of murder under California law. That's for a jury to decide. I don't know if mental illness rises to the level of legal insanity. That's for psychiatric experts to evaluate and a court to determine. But I do know this. Whatever happens next, it will happen on a more level playing field. Nick will have competent representation. Kimberly Green has 19 years of experience. And the LA County Public Defender's Office handles serious cases every day. He'll have access to investigators and experts. He'll have his day in court. What he won't have is his parents' money tipping the scales in his favor. And for the first time in 32 years, Nick Reiner will face consequences without someone writing a check to soften the blow. Rob Reiner once said that during Nick's worst years, he and Michelle wondered if there was an end in sight and whether it would be the tragic one that a voice in the back of their heads kept telling them was coming. The tragic ending came. It came for them. And now finally the pattern they couldn't break in life appears to have broken in death, not by choice, not by design, but by circumstance. Circumstances beyond Nick's control, as Jackson put it. The money apparently stopped. The prosecution ended. The buffer between Nick and reality dissolved. He'll face his arraignment on February 23rd with a public defender by his side. He'll enter a plea. The case will proceed. And for the first time, the outcome will depend on the facts and the law, not on who can afford the most expensive legal team. That's not a tragedy. That's accountability. It's 17 years too late, but it's finally here. Give me your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube. Just search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi if you're not already there. Or on our Substack. The link is in the description. Hiddenkillers.substack.com. That's where you can interact with me directly on our Substack. So if you want to do that, you have any thoughts on this, you want something maybe on the air, like, hey, do you ever think about talking about this angle? You can communicate directly with me. And it's all free right now for a limited time on our Substack. So please do check that out. Again, link in the description, hiddenkillers.substack.com. And YouTube. Be sure to comment there if that's what you're using. Press subscribe wherever you're listening to us or watching us. If it's Apple Podcasts, hey, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts if you're finding our reporting valuable. Those few seconds it takes to type a little something, it does wonders for signaling to others that you're valuing our reporting, and then others discover us as well. So if you've found value in this, please do leave us a review there on Apple Podcasts. All right. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We will talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. On the track, my car's look is everything. But today, I'm talking about more than just paint schemes. I'm talking about my favorite games at Chumba Casino. Check out exclusives like Stampede Fury and my own King Croc Fury. It's just as wild as my car look in Texas. With over 200 games and new ones weekly, play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever?
Coming crew.
Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Game night's fun until someone spends 5 minutes lining up one shot. Chalk, breathe, re-chalk, still aiming. While they figure it out, I fire up Chumba Casino. I can spin anywhere, anytime, and there's always a new social casino game every week. Spins happen way faster than that shot. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Let's Chumba. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Victory Lane? Yeah, it's even better with Chumba by my side. Race to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.